The following talk was recorded at Libra Planet 2023, Charting the Course, an annual conference on current issues in ethics, social justice, and technology from the Free Software Foundation. Libra Planet is a live conference, and speakers often use slides and other visual tools to assist their presentation. You can see the videos of these talks at media.libraplanet.org or on the FSF PeerTube channel. Libra Planet speakers do not represent the mission of the Free Software Foundation. We host speakers talking about their uses of free software in different kinds of political and commercial work. The FSF supports their freedom, but does not take a position on any political issues other than those necessary to uphold the principles of free software. Like all the FSF's work on behalf of the freedom of all computer users, Libra Planet is made possible by thousands of individuals. To keep our work going, please consider becoming an associate member via my.fsf.org/join. or by making a donation at my.fsf.org/donate. You can stay informed by subscribing to our newsletter, The Free Software Supporter, at fsf.org/fss. For more information on Libra Planet, please visit libraplanet.org/conference.
So thank you very much, everyone, for being here. As they said opening the session here, the plan here is to try and plot the course forward. So what I'd like to talk about today is what might the course look like toward free and open Libre computing infrastructure for not only servers and desktops, but also things like phones and tablets. And specifically, I'm going to be talking about the RISC-V instruction set architecture. So this is a description of our talk. And I just wanted to point out that one of the things we're going to speak about quite in detail is the ARM instruction set architecture, which is, I think, a stepping stone toward a completely free and open instruction set architecture, the RISC-V architecture. So what exactly is RISC-V? Well, it's an instruction set architecture, which is basically the assembly language commands that a processor is able to process and handle. ISAs are licensed like software. Other active ISAs that are very popular that I'm sure many of you are familiar with would be, for example, Intel and AMD chips that use the x86-64 AMD instruction set architecture, and the ARM64, which is used in CPUs like the Graviton processor that Amazon uses for a lot of their cloud infrastructure, and many system-on-a-chip systems like Apple's A16 processors used in, for example, their laptops, and other Apple processors used in their iPhone devices. And of course, Qualcomm's Snapdragon, which if you use an Android phone, from a plethora of manufacturers, you most likely are running on a Snapdragon processor. So what are the current licensing statuses? And RISC-V is what we're here to talk about today because it's open, it's Libre, and it's extensible, and it's free as in freedom. So it's BSD licensed, which means that it's not quite GPL. It is possible to make a fork of RISC-V and have it be a proprietary system, but there will always be available chips and systems and instruction set architectures that are completely free in terms of freedom. X86-64 is proprietary, so it's not extensible, and it's extremely expensive to license. The only two licensees that I know of are Intel and, of course, the creator AMD. Now, ARM64, the reason we're going to talk about it today is because it's extensible, unlike X86-64 in that if you make a license of it, you're able to expand it, expand the number of instructions available. And it's still somewhat expensive, though. So it's at a disadvantage to RISC-V, completely free and open. So what is the current state of the ISAs? Well, we know that Intel chips are pretty much in every laptop and infrastructure server that many of us have worked on over the years. It's very mature instruction set architecture, meaning it's very stable. The instructions don't change often. And if you write code on an Intel or AMD processor today, chances are years from now it's still going to run on existing processors that are becoming available. It's very high performance. It's been tuned over many years, and it has very broad support. Everyone that releases software, either free or commercial software, supports the x86-64 instruction set architecture. Examples, like I said, are nearly every data center server that's not a cloud provider, desktops and laptops. ARM64 is less mature. It has very good performance and broad support in it, like the Android operating system, for example, runs on it. Examples, AWS is a Graviton processor, which is going to be a focus of the talk that we're giving today. Apple computers are all ARM64-based. Most cell phones are ARM64-based, and as well as most tablets. So RISC-V, on the other hand, is currently still developing. It's got okay performance. It could use some tuning. It's missing some capabilities that are present in other instruction set architectures that are more mature. And it has okay software support. Not every piece of software that you want to run on RISC-V is going to currently be able to run on that system. Examples, deadboards primarily are available for RISC-V. System-on-a-chip devices are available. Embedded devices are very widespread, as well as task offloading. So you have daughter processors on boards like NVIDIA GPUs that are actually based on the RISC architecture. So right now, the deployment of RISC-V, there's probably tens of millions of cores. So it's not something that's brand new. It is broadly deployed, but it's not at the very surface level where a programmer would typically encounter it. So this progress that we're making from x86-64 to ARM64 to RISC-V, I think looks a lot like the progression that we've seen, especially us that were around in the 1990s, from commercial software to free software. So we started off with completely siloed, completely commercial software, and then we had the GNU project develop a tool chain that was completely free. And now we have things like GNU Linux, where you can do all of your day-to-day work on a completely free operating system. So x86 was like a small step toward openness because it got Intel and AMD working together on the same instruction architecture. AMD brought the cost of licensing much lower and had a much broader licensing policy. So it was a large step toward openness. Anyone can license ARM64. And you know, what did these ARM licenses look like? Because they weren't completely free open licenses. They were still restrictive, but they were based in terms of pricing on the number of CPUs that you were using. So if you're licensing ARM, for example, for a small number of embedded devices for very specialized use, like a robotics project, it would be relatively inexpensive. But if you're an Amazon or an Apple that's going to deploy hundreds of millions of devices, that's very expensive. But some companies purchase perpetual licenses. I know for a fact Apple did this, and I think Amazon did as well, but this is proprietary information. So these perpetual licenses mean all the money has already been paid. You do not have to license additional CPUs if you're Apple and you have one of these perpetual licenses. ARM would like to pretty much license to anyone and be as broadly deployed as it could. And the thing that was special about ARM compared to x86-64 was that often 10% of the CPU die was free space. So, for example, if you think of Amazon's model of the network is the computer and everything is the network, then what you could do with that free space, for example, is you could implement TCP/IP sockets on the chip in the CPU and TLS encryption to protect the traffic going through those network sockets. So it's possible to add instructions to ARM to do things like TLS encryption or TCP/IP sockets. And it's not easy, though, to get that into the ARM standard so that everyone implements it, because the ARM computer company decides how the instruction set architecture is extended. It's an arbitrary decision by company executives. Well, what about RISC-V? It's Liray, so it's BSD. You know, take it if you want it. You can do whatever extensions you want. You don't need anyone's permission. Compatibility, that's handled with flags, so you have different versions of RISC-V. Instructions and flags can be added through the open standards process. So if you need cryptography added to RISC-V processors, you can create a cryptography flag, and then you can create a cryptography test validation kit that will validate that a given RISC-V processor can correctly work through the test kit and produce valid results compatible with that flag. So some examples are RVV is one of the standards.
which is vector extensions for vector register computing. So this is like Intel's SSE and SSE2 used for graphics, primarily games and videos, as well as crypto extensions. So in terms of US NIST, AES and SHA encryption implemented in the CPU on chip. And also there's a Russian standard for Russia's ghost encryption algorithm. The progression that I'm trying to show here is like, we start off with like Microsoft, and then we go to GNU Linux, where we have a mix of commercial software and free software. We have a free kernel maybe, and we have a free tool chain and a lot of free applications, free editors like Emacs, but we don't have a completely free software stack for the entire operating system. And if we try and translate this into what we've seen instruction set architectures, we go from like ISAs like Intel's IA32 and IA64, AMD's x86-64, SGI's IRIX, IBM's Power instruction architecture, et cetera, et cetera. There's been so many over the years. And we wind up at then something that's more open and broadly licensed, like ARM64, which anyone's able to license, but it's still controlled by a central power, a central company, rather than open standards process. Do something like RISC-V that is much more like the GNU project in that it's controlled by an open standards process, and it is extensible by anyone and can freely be forked and developed to produce whatever CPU you need for your specific workload. So, you know, how are we going to drive RISC-V adoption? You know, what is the path forward, right? Like if we say people should move their phones to RISC-V, well, that's not something an individual can do, but who can actually pick up RISC-V and deploy it broadly? Well, I want to point out that Amazon has done this with ARM. So Amazon, I think, has the perpetual license, where ARM is essentially cost-free. And this is a bit of a disadvantage for RISC-V, because even though it's also cost-free, you don't have a monetary motivator to switch from ARM over to RISC-V. So the question becomes, which develops faster? If we can chart this path forward and get people excited about RISC-V and get developers working on it, then the free software community has proven that it can develop things much more fast than, say, a commercial software company with a small, limited number of employees. So if we use Libre software natively developed on RISC-V, and that becomes a motivator for, say, Amazon, who is known to deploy large amounts of free software as branded products, of course, they're going to pick the platform that software was developed on, because it's much more likely to run bug-free and problem-free. I do this myself with all of the systems that I manage. If I know software has been developed on a specific distribution of Linux, I'll deploy it on that distribution to avoid problems in the future. So another issue that we have is extension porting. Like I said, Amazon treats everything as the network as the computer. So they spend all this time with ARM processors and working to define TLS, crypto, and TCP/IP stacks in ways that they can fit on the ARM die for their Graviton processors. All of that work has got to be translated over to RISC-V. But you know, if we have open source developers working on doing that kind of work, then maybe that is much easier than it seems for Amazon if they need to do that kind of porting internally. So when we're talking about like validation and testing workloads, ARM64 is already everywhere in AWS. So not only do they have to, you know, re-implement on RISC-V, but they've got to test all of the software and validate that it runs well in their environment. Me personally, I run almost all of my MIT workloads on ARM64 Graviton chips on AWS. And the reason for that is the way Amazon prices is based on how their costs work out in acquiring chips. So Intel is at a set price, AMD is about 15% lower than that. And ARM64, their own internal version called Graviton, is about 35 to 40% below the AMD price. So we're able to save a lot of money by working on ARM64. And perhaps us and many other groups and organizations could save a lot of money by running on RISC-V instead of ARM64. AWS Lambda, which is a layer of abstraction above containers, it's essentially a API endpoint where you can write a script and call it with a URL, and not worry about any underlying operating system or configuration. AWS Lambda runs on ARM64 whether you want it to or not. You don't know what the backend is. You just know your API endpoint, and you call it and execute it, and you get your results back. There's a similar story with Apple, widely deploying ARM64 throughout their systems and stacks, and with Google through their Tau 2A chips, which are ARM64-based chips designed internally at Google. Other cloud providers, however, like Hetzger, a very large provider in Germany that serves a lot of Europe, Rackspace in Texas, which is not large enough to have its own chip engineers on staff to develop their own version of ARM64, or Yandex, the Russian cloud provider. Now, those are very different stories, like I said, because they can't afford the engineers to handle their own processing, their own development of processors. Especially Yandex is a very interesting story because of political sanctions. And I don't want to get political here, but I think this is one of the things that's really going to drive the adoption of RISC-V and its dominance over ARM64. So Russia and China both need chips, and not just for weapons, things like medical devices, pacemakers, cars, traffic lights, HVACs, TVs, phones, washing machines, everything you can think of, right? Nearly everything has a chip in it these days. ARM canceled all Russian licenses as part of their sanctions. So Russia is unable to manufacture any ARM chips, and they're unable to use the chips they've already developed. So how fast will RISC-V develop if Russia and China make an emergency move over to that platform? And what does that mean for free software developers? Well, Russia has their own proprietary, very long instruction word, ISA, called Elbrus. And VLIW, what that is it's a way to pack data into a very large word and have the instruction set architecture perform operations on that word in a way that essentially does multiple computing cycles at once. Was developed by the Moscow Center for Science and Technology. Excuse me. Elbrus was tested by Yandex, the main essentially Google-like company in Russia and cloud provider, versus Intel chips, and the test failed. The Elbrus chips were not able to perform anywhere near the Intel chips. They were unusable in Yandex's cloud infrastructure. And another point I want to make is one of the things that I think will push RISC-V, especially for China and Russia, and even the United States, is can you trust proprietary chips? Like, if you are buying chips and you don't know the software definition of the chip, how do you know exactly what you're buying? And how do you know it's bug-free? So many of us remember the Pentium 9 floating point division bug that produced invalid math results for certain revs of the Pentium 90 chip. And the only way people found out was that they ran their simulations or the calculations on other Pentium chips and realized they were getting different results. There was no way to validate that the Pentium 90 design was correct. Crypto bugs, there's recently been a very bad SHA-3 overflow bug that has probably made its way into hardware implementations of SHA-3, but there's not really any way to know other than testing for it now that it's been discovered many years after SHA-3 was standardized. Backdoors are a major concern. We've heard a lot in the news lately about certain companies trying to block the sale of internet routers from Chinese companies or from U.S. companies, et cetera. And there's other possible problems even with manufacturing. Stealthily doped gates. So if you have a random number generator that underlies all of your cryptography and many of your mathematical simulations, but if you, when you're actually doing lithography of the chip, slightly change the chemical properties of given gates, say in the random number generator, you can make it more likely that certain random numbers will come up and weaken cryptography or impact simulations or mathematical calculations. So getting started with RISC-V, how do you do that? How do you become a RISC-V developer? And like I said, I'm thinking from the software perspective. Kurt is going to come up in a minute and speak more of the hardware perspective and what the community is like. Ubuntu has RISC-V images, and so does Debian. So you have a full Linux stack, a full Linux operating system that can run on RISC-V. And you have build tools that can run on RISC-V and interpreters, so C, C++, Python, Golang, Rust, Ruby, Java, et cetera, all of your code that you've written for interpreters or even for compilers can be built and run on RISC-V because those underlying pieces of software, whether compiler or interpreter, has been validated on RISC-V. So how do you get access to a RISC-V chip to run your code on it and work with code on RISC-V? QEMU emulation, it has GNU packages that are built for RISC-V ISAs. So you have both the 32-bit, which is used in embedded devices, and the 64-bit cores, which would be something that you would see in a computer or a telephone or a tablet. You can also use a FPGA, field programmable gate array, and you can download Verilog, which is a hardware definition language. That is the software definition of the RISC-V chip off of GitHub and load it into an FPGA and essentially run a copy of a RISC-V chip and run your software on that. And RISC-V hardware is also available. There's many dev boards. MangoPi, Sci5 has a system on a chip, and Star5 is a Chinese company that makes RISC-V chips. So before you get intimidated thinking about hardware and building chips, this is a full definition of a RISC-V processor in Verilog hardware definition. And you can see it could fit on a postcard. It's only a few hundred lines of code. I have a poster that Red Hat gave me many years ago that was version 0.01 printed on a poster of the Linux kernel. And it is a full-size poster in a much smaller font and much, much more code and much more complex. So if you've ever worked on a Linux kernel, you can definitely work on RISC-V processor design very easily. And I want to kind of end on just showing, like, what does this path forward look like longer term? What are the forward-looking statements we kind of promised? Well, Mark Andreessen, a famous venture capitalist, said, software is eating the world. Everything is becoming software from top to bottom. So library software and hardware is going to evolve faster, and it has more eyes on it. It means less bugs, less security issues. It's going to move faster and be more appealing to people. So Libre software is cheaper because you need to invest less in it. And a Libre CPU is inevitable, and RISC-V is the most likely candidate there because it's already well-established and deployed. Like I said, there's tens of millions of RISC-V processors out there right now in many places that people don't even know. If you have an NVIDIA GPU at a higher-end card, you're running a RISC-V processor. And I wanted to say that AI can help with hardware design. So there's free software systems for developing things like PCB boards, and there's also proprietary ones that are a little bit more advanced right now. Like Altium Designer can do a 7-layer board path timing and electromagnetic interference prevention with traces and component spacing to help you design your own board and your own RISC-V systems. And we recently had a Google chip design lead talk at the MIT AI lab, and he showed something in his talk that I found really amazing. When Google designs their chips based on ARM64, Google uses AI to help design the chips at the gate level. So AI is getting to the point where it's starting to develop chips. And imagine that the future full stack is all Libre software, from CPU all the way up to the applications that you use. And imagine a profiler can make RISC-V CPU design adjustments in real time and decisions about that. If you're using, for example, a FPGA to power your RISC-V software and hardware system. So if your application is using lots of AES-128 crypto, well, then maybe you add more AES-128 crypto modules in your Verilog of the processor you're going to design. Lots of network traffic, more L2 cache, and more paths to RAM and the network interface card. Simulations with big number mathematics, more 1,024-bit registers inside your RISC-V chip. And when once you evolved your workload, say, over a month of this redesign of the RISC-V in real time, which you'd never be able to do with an ARM chip or an AMD or Intel chip, then you can actually take that to actual silicon and have incredible performance, I think, against a proprietary solution. So the more free the licensing gets, the more freedom you have in your engineering and development. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Kurt to talk a little bit about some of the community and development-related tasks.
Thank you, Alex. So I'll tear through this. This is a lot of TLDR stuff that it's It's support material for a lot of what Alex talked about. This is past his prologue. The first five line items there are basically risk one through risk five. That's what the V in risk five is for. The two 800-pound gorillas in the risk five business were UC Berkeley professors, David Patterson and Kristi Asanovic. David Patterson, one of the co-authors of the definitive textbook. So if you are a computer architecture student at a university, you have probably had Patterson and Hennessy as your textbook. And they had predecessors to RISC-V at Berkeley, loosely described in hindsight as 1 through 5, but these were referenced in earlier. If you get the Patterson-Hennessy book now, it's they use RISC-V as their code examples, but it might have been DLX or OpenRISC in previous editions. So I won't talk too much about the predecessors, except for the fact that you will not find a FOSSI, free or open source silicon CISC architecture. All of those, Spark, OpenPython, SuperH from Hitachi, these are all RISC-V, RISC designs that preceded RISC-V. And some of them, like a Hitachi SuperH, is now slipping into free source because a lot of the patents are expiring. This is true for MIPS as well. So I'm using the IIT Madras taxonomy here to describe the trade space for RISC-V. It's a very ambitious ISA. You can get into a work group for any particular extension you want, from microcontrollers to the bottom right. They reference a supercomputer data center style processor, and certainly, if you've read anything about country of India is really getting behind this initiative. They want a country-specific architecture, a processor, and it's going to be RISC-V. IIT Madras has a Shakti processor it's a wonderful design. It's one of these great designs that's great for education, and it's going to be when they finish production, it'll be a great production model too. They're a very interesting project to follow, is Shakti. But that space describes a lot of initiatives. There's a lot more people in the microcontroller space than there are in the RV64 business, as you might expect. A lot of the commercial entities that have a RISC-V design are, say, your Western Digitals or your Seagates, who are on the commercial page on the RISC-V site as partners. They're looking for hard drive and NVMe controllers, and that's going to be 32-bit and down, RV16 sometimes. So I'll tear through this. Here again, the RISC-V movement started in Berkeley. The RISC-V Foundation started out near the UC Berkeley campus, and the company Sci-5, one of the founders, Kristi Asanovic, started the company Sci-5 in California. So if you're going to buy hardware now, they've got the bulk of the hardware for sale out there. They've got dev boards, multi-core processors. You can contact them for a boutique design if you've got some functionality you want to build into a RISC-V processor and don't have the asset available to yourself. Same is true for Rios Lab. I'll list off a couple of the other companies really quickly, Empiris, Esperanto, Andes. These are companies that are substantially RISC-V only. They are chip design houses. And here again, they've got their own products line, and they're willing to partner with your design. But these are substantially RISC-V only designs now, which is really interesting. You couldn't say that a couple of years ago. You couldn't list 10 companies that were MIPS companies. They're all substantially at Embedded World right now. There'll be a lot of videos coming out talking about some of their new designs. Codasip is interesting. They'll sell you a processor that is very good at a specific AI framework that'll solve MNIST AI problems for you, which really points out one of the beauties of the RISC-V design is being able to introduce the bit that you're interested in accelerating into the core design. So then it stops being an ASIC at that point, an application-specific IC and becomes an ASIP in the processor, right next to the processing elements, to the CPU and whatever other things you have in there. That bodes well for some of the designs going forward on that. And then Imagination Technologies, they own MIPS, but they're also very interested in RISC-V. And here again, there's a couple of hundred companies listed as partners on the RISC-V Foundation. The big organizations have RISC-V initiatives either internally in public. Google sponsors OpenTitan, or they're keeping their fingers in the loop somewhere. They come to the meetings, and occasionally you see presentations from the big organizations. So here again, I won't belabor a lot of the links here. If you go to RISC-V.org, it's a very well set up site now. You can drill down into the area of interest if you're looking for membership information, or if you're looking to discover the broad range of various licensed classed architectures. The ones that UC Berkeley has donated to the cause, you can download that RTL and start building, a five-stage pipeline processor of your own if you want to look into that. And then they also have other cores in there. Some cores are public domain. Some cores have some other license on it, but they maintain a site for that. The FOSSI Foundation is a European equivalent, so free and open source silicon. They host a lot of conferences, one of those being in the US, the LatchUp conference, which is at the end of this month in UC Santa Barbara. Heavy academic presence there, but you'll also get the occasional industry person come and talk. A lot of you are familiar with CrowdSupply as the crowdfunding site. They do they do exclusively technical projects. That's where you'll see some of these oddball RISC-V products like the soldering iron. I really think this is fascinating about, when a new architecture or a new concept comes out, what people will do with it. Like, when MIDI was new, somebody built Pac-Man using the MIDI commands, and of course that didn't survive, but it's an interesting time to be looking at what some of these RISC-V designs are and what people are doing with them. Because of the nature of the licensing and the ISA, if you've got some room, if you've got some real estate in there, you can have a core of one architecture and then a RISC-V core or multiple cores. So Bunny Huang's blog talked about one design that they're looking at to do with that. So that really brings up some interesting security implications. You can have fat binaries that could run on either core. They haven't gone down this road yet, but this is certainly an area of research that a lot of people are looking at, the multi-architecture. I think fat binaries has a lot of potential. Now, there's the big IEEE conferences and, Micro and some of the hot chip conferences. You'll find a lot of RISC-V presentations there. But there are niche conferences, especially here on the East Coast, that are targeted at RISC-V. This one we have here in Boston, over the course of the years, it has become quite dominated with RISC-V talks. We've had the occasional, we had some of the JCOR folks talk about concepts which sort of, are applicable to a lot of different ISAs. Secure enclaves, for instance, a lot of people are looking at some way to embed a level of security at the hardware level that we don't currently have. This could potentially help us out with things like heartbleed and meltdown, and we have papers and presentations on that. I don't think we've had a meltdown presentation for a while, but you can go to that site and see the presentations from previous years. So here again, there's a working group at the RISC-V Foundation that's looking at safe and secure designs and how to introduce this into the pool that you can then stick into your system on chip or your system on module design. That's very encouraging. Let's see. There is One of the professors I mentioned, Kirsty Asanovic, will be at my tea on Monday if you want to go by. He's invited by the architecture, computer architecture department over there, so he'll speak at CSIL. And then, of course, I'm sure a lot of you know about the Hardware Summit, Open Hardware Summit, which is in New York this year, next month. It occasionally comes through the Boston-Cambridge area, but it hasn't been. It certainly hasn't been in the last couple of years. In fact, I don't think it was in person the last couple of years. So if you look at the Debian ports list, there's some interesting hardware still being supported as the distros are substantially walking away from supporting 32-bit processors. It's interesting to see what processors are lapsing into either public domain or abandonware. I think this is encouraging because a lot of these sort of broader concepts we can vet out in another architecture and introduce into RISC-V, especially as the working groups become more mature and things iterate, and then they freeze a design, and then you can introduce one of these functionalities into RISC-V. So certainly, China has bought up a lot of the whatever intellectual property was left from DEC Alpha. So the big supercomputers in China, it's believed that they're using Alpha in at least one of those big supercomputer designs. There's a supercomputer or two that's almost entirely FPGA based. So that's encouraging because if you can make a new breakthrough in the same amount of logic units that you're currently operating on, you could potentially, over the course of a weekend, reprogram your supercomputer. That's encouraging because a lot of these, when you download one of these RISC-V designs that you want to play with, like the one Alex showed, you flash that into an FPGA. If it's a beefy RISC-V processor, you get a more expensive FPGA, but you can certainly get some of these low-end FPGAs to start experimenting with RTL and Chisel and some of these other HTMLs to get comfortable with RISC-V design. So we're, to bring it back to where Alex left off, we're very interested in the high end of the RISC-V processor space. You can certainly get processors now. You can get RV64, so 64-bit with a lot of extensions. If you want vector processing, there's a vector extension. You can get Hybrid Memory Cube or HBM in the designs. We're hoping that they'll be moving towards an even bigger design, something that no one's offered yet in either RISC or VI, which is 128-bit programming. Now, here again, no one's asking for it. There's stuff you can do with 128 bits that people probably do want, which is the memory addressing, but no one's really sure what to do with the instructions. You can do ternary instructions. You can do some interesting things with 128-bit. Now, that isn't moving that quickly. There's a RV128i subgroup in the RISC-V Foundation, and it's moving along, not moving as quickly as some of the other working groups because of the number of people in it. But it'll get there. OpenNovation is a site that's we maintain a lot of the HPC and supercomputing codes there, and we try to keep them up to date. We at least keep the site up to date on the community efforts and where they are. There's about a dozen codes that make up more than 50% of the workload in supercomputing centers, certainly the academic supercomputing centers, and there are various open source versions of them at various levels of development, and we keep a list on them and keep that site up to date. So I think we're almost ready to throw this to Q&A, but I'll come back to Alex's discussion about where you can go with RISC-V that certainly CISC can't follow. Intel and AMD are very much beholden to their legacy. Most other RISC architectures are as well. RISC-V, there's a POSIT working group. If you're interested in using John Gustafson's POSIT's design to replace IEEE 754, there is a working group for that with sort of an informal meeting schedule. There is an RV128i working group. And here again, that's moving along. The RISC-V Foundation and the Linux Foundation, which is the parent of the RISC-V Foundation, very deliberate in their cycles and when they freeze designs. So I think we can go back. Let me go back to the top page, and Alex and I can answer questions now. Can I do that? Yeah, I can. I'll go back to the homepage for Q&A. That sound right? Okay.
Just informed of the new schedule. Apparently, there's only 1 minute left. So, but if people want to ask a question, please come forward and speak into the microphone so people online can hear.
Actually, is there one paper? Is there one more page after? Okay, let me pull that up. Yes, sir.
Okay, so so in my university, I'm currently taking an FPGAs course, and I'm wondering, assume I do download the RISC-V instruction set that's given, what are some ways I can, experiment with that from there?
You mean locally?
Yeah.
So, that's a good question. So, which school are you at? Okay, so I guess I can find out the one thing we keep discovering. There's a SIG academic subgroup at the RISC-V Foundation. They meet biweekly, and we kind of find out informally who the local repository is. And so we've discovered recently there's a huge initiative going on at Rice. I've met a Penn State person recently, so I'll find out. It's they don't. They don't keep a really good list of that because if you look at the universities that are community partners, they don't have a strong, you click on the link and it brings you to the school homepage.
Yeah.
But I'll research that
and
for you if you want.
I have one more question for the other guy. I was wondering, so when you... am I too close? Oh, get closer. Okay, is this better?
Just fine.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So I was wondering. Okay. So I was wondering when you were talking about the situation with Russia and China being sanctioned and how that can help RISC-V adoption. I was wondering why should we assume there's necessarily any incentive for those military those militaries to share whatever they work on with the design and that how that will actually translate back to users. Both, I guess, regular Russian citizens or even citizens worldwide.
Okay, so yeah, just to be clear, I wasn't speaking about military. Yandex is of course, a commercial company like Google. So I don't expect things to come out of the Russian or Chinese military, mm-hmm. but I expect that commercial companies that are trying to survive in Russia and China will jump on the open source bandwagon. If you actually look at who is working on many of the NVIDIA cards and mm-hmm. the Intel processors, the AMD processors, a lot of them are Russian nationals who've gone through U.S. universities and things like that. So I don't expect any kind of military overlap, and I wouldn't encourage that. But because those companies run all open source software, GNU Linux, mm-hmm. they would want to contribute back just for stability and progress.
That makes sense.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, everyone.